you live in Arms with Glenn
and John,
and it is a wonderful pre-recorded show coming to you
in the future, from the present
of the past. We're doing that.
Yep.
And drinking V8. I don't know what people don't like about V8. I'm not gonna turn this into a V8 commercial, but people don't like V8. Sometimes I drink tomato juice. Like I'll be on a flight, and I'll be like, "Oh, what do you want? Like ginger ale, Jameson, or something?" And I'm like, I'll take a V8. You got some pepper?
It's like a Bloody Mary.
People look at me and they're like, tomato juice? Really? That's where you're going?
I like tomatoes. I do not like the taste of tomato juice.
See, I also love Bloody Marys.
Yeah, I'll take a Bloody Mary, but I couldn't drink V8.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, here, put some of this in there. We got you.
Yeah, that's basically, yeah. You had some of Neil's moonshine in there.
Put some shine in there and you'd be good. You'd be right.
You can also run an engine for 6 years off of that.
If it had been cold in this office today, I was going to take a shot of that warm up. I'm not even joking.
Boom! That stuff is fire.
Yeah.
We're coming to you from the AR-500 Armor Studio. Enjoying our time off today. It's not our time off today. We're actually at the show today.
Yes.
But we're not actually at the show today.
Right.
I always like playing with this idea.
It's always a lot of fun, right?
I wear it out. You're listening to me, but not really listening to me.
Yeah.
All right. News, I have no idea. Politicians are still corrupt. Some people are still good. A lot of people are still bad. You should still definitely invest more in yourself than other people. And how you hold the gun makes it an assault weapon. Says an anti-gun expert, according to the Washington Examiner. Democratic Virginia Mark Levine said the biggest difference between hunting rifles and assault weapons is, and I quote, how you hold the gun. Speaking at a public meeting, the author of legislation, let that sink in, to ban AR-style guns and large bullet-holding magazines used in semi-automatic weapons, also said shooters could use several fingers to pull the trigger. And deer know the sound of a bullet shot through a silencer better than humans. Because of all the conversations he's had with deer.
Wait.
Before I go deeper,
stop.
This is an elected official.
This guy's seen Bambi one too many times.
Virginia voters are responsible for this somewhere. Mark Levine.
Oh, yeah. God.
As audience members were heard chuckling in the background, Levine said, quote, in terms of the differences of the guns, the heart of the difference is how you hold the gun. It makes it a semi-automatic, end quote. He showed his trigger finger moving and added, quote, meaning you can shoot with each finger, not like a bolt action, end quote, typically used in hunting. Basically, the difference between guns that go like this, all quotes, he said, extending one arm long, presumably to show holding a long barrel. These are rifles. Use them to shoot an animal, and you can shoot very precisely. As to define guns, he would ban in a meeting last week. He said, mass shooters don't like things that go like this, posing as if holding a bolt-action rifle. Explaining why, he said, quote, what that means is that somebody could hit the rifle butt against their head. Deer don't do this, elk don't do this, but humans trying to save their lives do this, end quote. Then waving his arm Rambo style in a sweeping fashion, he said, quote, mass shooters use guns that go like this. Guns that go like this are wildly inaccurate. And if you watch the fucking video, it's hilarious, all right? You can look it up.
Please, God, send me
the link. Just Google Virginia Delegate Mark Levine, and you can watch him holding his hands out. His comments have been mocked by gun users, of course, especially the NRA, after they posted the video. He knows nothing about what he's trying to ban, says Eric Pratt, Senior Vice President of GOA, Gun Owners of America. Obviously, he's watched too many movies. So here's the issue that comes from this. First of all, this guy's a fucking fool. He's a tool. He's everything's wrong with our government, all right? And more. Second of all, this person is an elected official. People wanted this guy over other options. All right? And third of all, the majority of legislation that's authored by people like this, it's like the shoulder thing that goes up. Do you remember that? That stupid freaking chick, McCartney, or whatever her name is.
The shroud of the barrel.
Yeah, where they're trying to get her to explain when the assault weapons ban in 1994 was about to sunset in 2004, after 10 years of literally doing nothing to reduce crime. Shocker. You want to see, if you ever want to see an experiment that fails, gun control is the experiment to look at. It's never succeeded anywhere. It's never been tried throughout history, throughout the world,
but
anywhere. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't work.
But we'll do it next. No, you won't get it right because it doesn't fucking work.
Well, communism's right? The same way. That's another failed experiment that people continue to try.
I understand. Like, here's the deal, man. I remember when that was about to happen, 2004, and it was about to sunset, and this McCartney, I can't remember, Senator or something, McCartney or something like that, she was on a talk show or a news channel, and they're trying to get her to explain, like, if you want the assault weapons ban so much, and it hasn't done anything to affect crime rates, like, explain some of these parts. What's a barrel shroud? And she's like, well, the exact, you know, what'd she say? The exact wording of the bill isn't as important. And the guy was like, beep, beep, honk the horn and shut this fucking truck down. Are you serious? You think the words in the bill don't matter? Well, the exact terms. No, 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 lady. The exact terms are actually the most important thing in this bill. And he was like, that's why I want you to explain these things to me. Do you... The person who's pushing this bill to get passed, having looked at a history where this bill didn't work, and now you want to do it again for another 10 years, tell me what this stuff is. What is a barrel shroud? Which, of course, is a protective shroud that goes over the barrel to protect the user from burning their hands. Mostly used on things like fucking trench warfare shotguns.
Yeah.
And they put it in the ban because it looks scary or sounds bad. And she says, and I quote, it's the shoulder thing that goes up. Now, the best part about that quote of the shoulder thing that goes up is it led to the last 15 plus years of memes where everyone, when they picture her, they've taken her face and put it on the Predator with his little rocket launcher cannon thing that comes off his shoulder and said, oh, this must be a barrel shroud, right? And there's 1,001 things. Every time a gun has something with a shoulder thing that comes up, if someone's like, is this a barrel shroud? And it's like an adjustable, you know, comb rest for your face, because it is a shoulder thing that goes up. Like, what exactly, lady, is the shoulder thing that goes up? You're so incredibly
ignorant.
Uneducated.
Ignorant.
And voluntarily ignorant.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That they legitimately don't care. They just want some kind of victory that says, we fought for gun control, constituents, and we got it. We made America's streets safer today. Thus ensuring that they will continue on in their stupid political career because they made some constituents happy about their assault weapons ban. Which didn't ban assault weapons at all.
And assault weapons is not even a real term.
Right? Assault rifle is a real term. It's a military term to describe a certain type of rifle in a certain configuration. An assault rifle is a real thing. Guess what we don't have as civilians outside of the world of NFA? Assault rifles, because an assault rifle is a select fire tool. We do not have those outside of getting involved in the NFA.
In an intermediate cartridge.
And nobody...
Gas operated,
magazine fed.
Weird.
So it's like the whole idea here is, dude, these people literally have no idea. In all honesty, right? Probably aren't an FBI watch list, so I'm okay saying this. In all honesty, these people need to be removed from office forcibly. I'm not saying, my FBI friends, that I'm going to go do that right now. What I am saying is that's the only way to get those idiots out of there. These people
you can't vote
so
them out. At this point, you can't vote
them
out.
They're so stupid. Can you imagine being this person and writing legislation, trying to gain support for that legislation by going on a fucking stage in front of people that you're supposed to be convincing your legislation is correct?
And waving your dumbass hand
your hands in the fucking air.
Well, this is how a fucking rifle works.
This is how it goes. And deer know the sound of suppressors. What are you, a fucking animal biologist? What do you mean deer know the sound of suppressors? You're an idiot. Clearly you've never hunted literally not a fucking 1 hour, not a minute of your life. Maybe you saw a hunting camo when you drove past a Bass Pro Shop. But the closest that guy's ever come to a fucking hunting anything. And these are the people, and that doesn't get, it's like the regular people are so, who gives a shit anymore? That we just laugh at this. We shouldn't be laughing at this. This is our leadership. These are the people who are literally circling us down the drain. And it sucks because what do? We laugh at it. We can't vote them out. I can't vote them out. I have no effect over Mark Levine, short of going and forcibly removing him from office, which quite honestly isn't in my best interest. Mm-mm. It is long-term for the freedom and liberty of our country and my grandchildren and their grandchildren, right? For the posterity of our countrymen, it's in our best interest. But for my personal, legitimate best interest right now, it's not my best interest to go fight that fight. But he's a fool. He's a fucking joke. He's a joke as a man. He's a joke as a human. He's a joke as a fucking legislative official. He's a joke as an elected official. He's just a joke. People are laughing at him in the audience. The video is hilarious. You gotta watch. It's fucking hilarious. People, you can literally hear, they're not laughing out loud like a comedy show, but you people, there's a lot of like chuckling, and people are kind of like, is this guy serious? You know? He starts holding his hands out. He's like, this is what a gun does. And this is what a semi-auto does, but this is what a bolt action does. And you're just like, are you for real? What are you, are you a mime or some kind of like, you know, stage actor? What is this?
Yes.
Shit.
Yes.
Are you having a seizure?
Are you having a seizure? Sir, look at me and raise both arms slowly at the same time. Oh, shit.
Do you think these guys see like the memes people make about them?
Yeah, they don't care though.
No, they don't care.
It doesn't hard. But it doesn't affect them.
No, dude, you nailed it. You hit the fucking nail.
Oh, they're
male mime. No, they're stage actors.
They're pupper.
Every fucking one of them is a stage actor. All of them. At every level.
Disposable.
They're disposable. They're bought and paid for.
The power behind them is not the one on that stage making stupid hand gestures.
Nope. There's not an elected official in the United States of America that is not bought and paid for in some way, shape, or form. Period. The entire system is completely fucking corrupt. There's nothing we can do about it other than options that are not in our personal best interests.
John, are you suggesting that the toaster is broken?
Yes, yes, I am. Indeed.
Are you suggesting that perhaps legislative process and due process are not the best possible solution?
They are not. But
that's it. I'm out. I'm done. I'm done with the show. Close it down. I'm right. That's all that matters. I'm done. We're done. I'm done here. No more shows for the Armstrong.
But I still stand by my statement. You have to work within the system that you've got.
But what if the system's so corrupt that it doesn't work?
Like you always say, nobody's going to change until the alternative is better. The alternative's
got to be worse,
there
man.
There you go.
The alternative has to be worse.
I'm still able to look at dank maymays on my phone right now.
I can. Toilet still flush, lights still come on. I can still walk into the food and get a can in the grocery store and get some food. So, damn it. All right, Redwire Gear Moment, go.
Adaptable multi-use equipment is your best option. There's a rabbit hole here that we could get into, but I'll clear this up real quick. Your equipment should work with and or enhance your abilities. You should not have to adjust to your own equipment. Like, your equipment should be adjustable and adaptable to you, and it should help enhance your performance, regardless of what that performance is. Rucksack should fit you right. Trigger should help you shoot better once you reach a certain point. You should not be working around your equipment. You should be making your equipment work around you.
All right.
Boom. And that's what I've got for you this week.
Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by RedwireGear.com. What did we talk about last week? What was your Redwire Gear Moment last week? Which was like an hour and a half ago.
Buy once, cry once.
I think we got off on a tangent.
Beware of low-grade nylon goods.
All right. Topic for today is being a good spotter and overall a good shooting partner. So here's why this came up. Came up from a couple of listeners emailing and messaging us saying, how do we be a good spotter? Like, how do I watch for trace? How do I watch for impacts? What kind of conditions are best? How do I translate that to someone for making adjustments? So basically, this show is about to turn into a little bit of a class-type environment.
Yeah, because I'm an idiot when it comes to that. I understand the concept of being able to see trace and call hits, but that's about it.
So, James, as the newest one of the three of us in long range shooting, what do you think like your number one question is about spotting?
About spotting?
Being a spotter.
Placement behind the shooter. How important is placement behind the shooter?
That's a really good question.
Placement behind the shooter. Yeah. So as a spotter, and that's a good starting point. As a good spotter, you need to be directly behind your shooter. And you, in theory, would be as close to the bore line as possible. You know, sometimes we'll demonstrate like a really good shooter-spotter relationship.
It's basically like a machine gunner, a gunner.
It's essentially like that, man. You're basically laying on your shooter. Now, you move, the spotter moves around the shooter always because the shooter's position is more important than the spotter's position because they have to absorb recoil and things like that. And spotters have to look, but they also have to be comfortable to an extent. But you're essentially a good connection is you're basically laying over the top of them so that your spotting scope is directly behind their bore and their scope. Why it's important, and I don't expect anybody to do that. We certainly don't do that in competition. Your spotter isn't going to lay on you while you're in position. But a good spotter will get directly behind you. Why that's important? It's like sitting in the passenger seat and looking over at an old school speedometer with a needle and trying to tell your driver how fast they're going and that offset that you're going to see, right? And the further to the right or left or up or above I am, the harder it is to tell accurately where that needle actually sits. I might be able to say, you're somewhere between 50 and 60. It's probably pretty hard for me to tell him he's going 56. Whereas obviously the shooter's looking, or the driver's looking straight on at it. So if you're a spotter and you're looking at it from an angle, you're already kind of putting yourself in a real tough spot because what you think is going left is actually, you know, potentially going over the top, or you don't know if it's right or left. You see a splash behind it. You're not sure how it got there, right? So that's thing number one is be directly behind the shooter. Another really important part kind of related to that is going to be the quality of your glass. Now, you don't have to go out and get the God scope, right? You don't have to have some 80 power, huge, you know, 85 millimeter monster freaking spotting scope. But it doesn't hurt, all right? The best spotting scope you can afford is going to benefit you, especially when you're very first starting to learn how to spot. Because it's going to give you a lot of adjustment, a lot of light transmission. It's going to give you a lot of clarity. It's going to really help you be able to see things you might not otherwise even know that you're looking for. The crappier quality of the spotting scope, which unfortunately with spotting scopes is usually directly related to price, the more difficult it is for you to pick up trace, to see clearly, to make out fine impacts on targets if that's what you're trying to look for. So always good quality glass. In relation to good quality glass is going to be potentially getting a reticle in the glass. And almost any major company offers that now. I do not think it is a necessity, but if you're going to be spotting for corrections for someone and you're not as good at it yet as you want to be, having a reticle is easy, man. I put the reticle, I watch the impact, boom, it hits. I move my reticle to the impact. I count over, up, down, whatever it may be to the target and say, all right, you're going to go 2.5 minutes up and 1 minute down because that's what my reticle says, and now that's going to get you on target or close to where we want to be, right? So having a reticle built in a spotting scope is a very big advantage. In line with quality of spotting scope is going to be things like quality of mount and tripod. Mm. Tripods these days are insanely stable. I prefer like a 40 millimeter tall standing, like 6 foot tall.
Wasn't that taller?
Carbon fiber leg tripod. I want a big fucking deal when I'm out spotting for someone. I don't want the wind to blow it over. I want it to be solid. I don't want the wind to shake it. I'm going to have a mount that's as low to the top of the tripod as possible. You start getting mounts to get, the higher you get away from the top of that tripod,
the less stability you've got.
The less stability, because now you've got all this great stability from legs, and you're like, oh, cool, I got all this stability.
And then you put it all on a toothpick.
And I put it all on, a toothpick, basically. And you're like, well, that's not going to work, you know? And look at, like, the mounting platform. How well is this mounting platform going to work, right? So that's going to be a big, important factor. So those things are important for spotting, all right? This is the right equipment. Other things that are important for spotting is a really good laser rangefinder. If I'm going to be spotting distances for my guy, for my shooter, then I need to have a really good rangefinder. Better quality rangefinders are not as expensive as better quality spotting scopes. You want a kick-ass fucking spotting scope, get ready to drop a monthly mortgage payment, all right, or more. You want a really kick-ass laser rangefinder, get ready to drop a monthly car payment, right? Very different. You don't have to spend as much to get as good of a rangefinder these days. One thing I use for spotting is I use a combo of high-quality binoculars coupled with a high-quality rangefinder. So, like, the Vortex Furies are my choice. There's a lot of good ones out there. The Leicas are kind of the standard by which everyone's judged, I would guess. But the Vortex makes the Furies. That it's a binoculars, 10-power built-in. So it's not very high power for, like, spotting really specific hits. But if I throw that thing on a tripod, now I can spot targets. I can spot wind conditions. I can generally spot hits. And I can give someone range. So if it has to be a quick and under field conditions and relatively close, you know, inside of 500 yards or whatever, pretty easy to do my spotting with those things. That's advantageous when looking at different types of gear. In the field, if you've got to move around a lot, you might have a lighter weight spotting scope, which is obviously going to trim your capability and magnification. But magnification is not as important as quality of optics. I would rather have a 10 to 30 spotting scope that was like really high-end glass than have a 20 to 60 spotting scope that was really bad glass. Because the quality of glass is going to be far superior to the range of magnification. It's not that common that I'm at full magnification when I'm spotting. Even with my big old God scope, I'm rarely at full mag because there's things you need to know about spotting. First of all, I need to have as much field of view as possible for a couple of reasons. One is communicating with my shooter. If I can't see shit, if I'm like, I'm looking for the tree that looks like a duck, man, but now I'm scanning the whole damn hillside, I'm at 60 power and I can't freaking see anything. Either be back down to 10, 15 power, whatever. Okay, cool, I see the tree that sort of kind of looks like a duck. Is there a big gray rock to the 7 o'clock? Yep, I'm on it, dude. I got your freaking duck tree. Talk me another target from there, man, you know? Like, that shit happens. That's the kind of basic communication that you have to have sometimes to be able to get onto target either as a spotter or a shooter. So most of the time I'm at lower magnification just for that. I'm also at lower magnification to pick up trace, wind conditions, and very stray impacts, especially when you're shooting at longer ranges where your misses might be in feet, right, instead of inches. So I back down my magnification. Generally put the target in the bottom third of the spotting scope so that I can catch the trace as it rises above the target. Because remember, you're dealing with trajectory. So, you know, if you're going to be, you know, it's you make your adjustment. Yeah, if you make your adjustment, and I'm going to pull up my calculator real quick. All right, let's say you're, like, I know my dope for a couple of my guns. So let's say you're 11.4 mils high at 1,000 yards, all right? Right, so you're 410 inches high. Right, let's say that. So you're 410 inches high. That means your max ordinate, the peak of where that bullet's going to hit, is going to be 410 inches, which is 34 fucking feet, all right, above your target. So when I aim at that, I adjust up 11.4 and fire that gun, that bullet is going to travel way the fuck up there. And if all I'm doing with my spotting scope is zoomed in on the target, I'm only going to catch that last little bit of trace as it comes in, and the likelihood I'm going to be able to track it is not very good. So I dial back my magnification, put the target in lower third, and then I go ahead and you know, try to put something behind the target if I can get a mount or something, if I can reposition myself or my shooter to get something a little darker or lighter or whatever it may be so I can catch that trace easier. And this is going to sound kind of odd to people, but if you look at it, it's hard to explain sometimes unless you're actually really there doing it, but hopefully you guys can follow along. Your focus knob has a towards the target and an away from the target direction, okay? So if I put my focus knob one way, I'm going to focus more on the target, and if I keep going, I'm going to end up focusing on things behind the target, right? I'm continuing towards the target. If I turn my focus knob the other way, then I'm focusing on things in front of the target until eventually I'm going to be focusing on things that are right in front of me. So we have a distance focus and away focus and a close focus, right? So when I am looking for trace, I close focus just a little so that the target is just slightly blurry. This brings into focus the space between me and the target, which makes doing things like picking up trace, especially in mirage conditions, way easier. And if I can pick up trace, I can literally follow it all the way in. Right? You can literally watch this matrix-like bullet effect all the way to the freaking target. And then if I'm directly behind the shooter and I've watched their trace, I can tell them, all right, you were off left, you were off right, you were low, you were high. If I have a reticle, now I can measure directly and tell them, hey, man, you were so many mils or minutes up, down, left, right. If I don't have a reticle, now I can use known sizes. As an example, let's say I'm shooting at a 20-inch target. Well, I watch where the impact goes. Whack. It hits the ground, if I can see it. Or at the very least, I watch where the trace goes. Okay? And I see where the trace impacts, and I'm like, all right, if that's a 20-inch target, I'm about half the target to the left and about a quarter of the target down, which means I'm about 10 inches left and about 5 inches low, right? Because I'm about half to the left and about a quarter down. So now that's a correction I can give my shooter. Either I can give it to them in inches or I can give it to them in an actual correction, whether that's minutes or mils, depending on what they're shooting. So understanding minutes and mils is going to be very important as well. And keeping a fucking calculator handy. No one expects you to do all the math in your head, all right? Pull out a freaking 99-cent calculator, right? Go to a fucking job fair, scoop up about six of those freaking things, all right? Stick them in every pocket of your range bag so that when you lose one, you just pull out another one, all right? They're a disposable piece of equipment. You're going to break them sooner or later, and just keep a freaking cheap little calculator handy, right? Mm-hmm. So now we've kind of talked about where to be. We've talked about some equipment to use for looking, including laser rangefinders, maybe some binos, definitely spotting scopes, some good solid tripods. Brand-wise, I'm mostly Vortex Optics on the majority of stuff I do. I use Leo Photo tripods and mounts. Mm-hmm. I use the Arca rail system, which you can get from Leo Photo Incorporated and all their stuff. I use a piece of engineer's marking ribbon for a wind indicator on my tripod. And I use a rock bag from, it's orange and black, unknown manufacturer from Amazon. Just look up tripod rock bag. It's like 14 bucks, and I'll put that on my tripod in case I need to weigh it down or just hold some equipment while I'm standing there. Those are basic adjustments I put on it. From there, you need some kind of weather meters, right? You can get the Weather Flow from Weatherflow, Geoballistics is the name of the company that mostly sells them. That thing is about 80 bucks. Then you couple that with the Ballistic Arc app, it's about 15 bucks, and you got yourself a pretty kick-ass freaking combination. I also always have a Kestrel. I have a Kestrel because it's quick. I don't have to Bluetooth it to my phone to get a wind reading. I have to do that with the Weatherflow. So I'll check like my density altitude, you know, throughout the day if I'm with my shooter spotting. I'm kind of checking that, making sure their data is not changing and they're not paying attention to it. And I use that kind of in a little bit every now and then. But when it comes time to just check the weather or check the wind, I like to have a Kestrel in my pocket. I can pull it out anytime, check the wind. How I learn wind and how I recommend that people learn wind is get a Kestrel. You don't need one of the crazy ones. Like I think I used the 2500 or maybe it's the 2700 or something like that. It gives me basically everything I need to formulate DA plus wind and all that shit. Get whatever you need that basically just gets wind. The cheaper ones are under 100 bucks. I think mine was only 150, 160. Like they're not a bank breaker when you're talking about the long range shooting world. And then I get a solid understanding of what foliage does in the area. And I do that through observation. So I go watch foliage in the area, you know, given the opportunity of wherever my operational environment's going to be. I watch how it bends. I watch how it flows. I check the Kestrel and see how fast it's going. And then I start making, you know, judgment guesses. Like I look outside and go, that's a 6 mile an hour wind. And I walk outside and check out my fucking Kestrel. Or if I'm on a hike and I feel wind against my face or I feel wind blowing across, I'm like, that's a 2 mile an hour wind. And I pull up my Kestrel and I fucking check it. Like it's an easy, easy, easy thing to practice. And eventually you will get to the point. And wind, by the way, is the humbler of all shooters. There's no shooter I've ever met in my life that just 100% understands a wind, 100% hits every shot. It just doesn't fucking happen, man. Sometimes you are like, I got the wind. And as you press the trigger, the wind changes. And in that microsecond, you're fucked. You know what I mean? Because it's just
shit went south.
That's what happened, man. Your bullet might be in flight for, you know, anywhere from a half a second if you're shooting really good, you know, extended distances or medium distances to extended distances. Your bullet can be in flight for anywhere from a half a second to several seconds, and the wind's going to be pushing all over the place during that whole time. So understanding what wind is actually doing, really teaching yourself how to observe wind. You know, how does a Palo Verde blow versus how does a cedar tree blow versus how does a pine tree sway? How does a ponderosa versus a Douglas tree sway? Like, different things like that. In that same vein is also understanding geographical features and how they affect. Like, if my shooter's about to take a shot above a canyon, have I factored in, you know, thermal lift? If it's early in the morning, sun's just coming up, that canyon's going to be warming up and that thermal air is going to become straight up, right? Heat air, hot air rises. Now I shoot across this canyon, hits that thermal lift, pushes the bullet up. Because of thermal lift, thinner air, and I miss over the back of this trophy elk, and I don't know why. You know? Because my spotter didn't say anything about these conditions. Being a good spotter means being more focused on the success of your shooter than the success of you being able to call a shot. And what I mean by that is, when I call a shot for someone, I rate my success as a spotter on whether or not they got a hit. Right? Not whether or not I called the correct shot. Now, the shooting ability is going to have something to do with this too. So if I have a capable shooter that I know can make this shot, you know, when Garrett a couple years ago shot that deer, you know, this is a hell of a shot, man. It was a longer shot than I ever taken on a big
680.
641. I gauge that success or not success, not on my ability to call the wind or call the distance or call the thermals or call the whatever. I gauge that based on my ability to get him on target. He got on target. He's a capable shooter. I knew he could make the shot. He made the shot. That's his success. My success comes from his success. Not from me going, fucking told you, man, should hold 2 mils for wind. Nope. And he was like, I don't know, man, it looks like a 1 mil win. And he fires 1 mil and misses, and you're like, fucking told you, dude. Should have fucking held 2 mils. Like, okay, what went wrong here? I remeasure. All right, he only held 1 mil instead of 2 mils. But damn, if he'd held 2 mils, that would have been too much. So now I can see where he hit holding 1 mil. Maybe it's more like 1.5 mils. All right, guys, let's give it a fucking 1.5 mils. You know, see what that does. So my ability to kind of swallow my pride a little bit and be okay to be wrong as a spotter and just be like, all right, man, that shooter is relying on you to give them good information. If you give them bad information and they act on that information, that's your fault. If you give them good information and they act on good information, that's also your fault. You know, so their successes and failures are typically directly related to spotter's ability to communicate with them effectively. So let's see, what other things have we got in here? Watching for impacts. I mean, always watch for dirt, right? Dirt drift, watch for trees to sway. You know, be careful about here's a common thing we'll see. A common thing we'll see is not understanding the geography or topography is a better way of where your targets are. Like, we used to shoot at a range a lot here in Arizona where there was a 1,000-yard target that was on a hillside that looked like it was on a hillside with a really good backstop. It wasn't. It was on the top of the hill. That backstop's 110 yards behind it.
Yeah.
So people would shoot, and they would see that impact on that rear hillside, and they'd be like, oh, man, you were just over the top of it. No.
You were like 3 feet over the top.
He wasn't just over the top of it. Yeah. He freaking cleared it. You know what I mean? And I've seen the same thing where people are like, oh, man, you were just over the top of it. And you're like, no, man, he was under it. You're seeing impact under the target. You're not seeing impact behind the target. A lot of that experience just comes from maybe looking at maps. I'm gonna pull that out. Okay, where's this, you know, fucking target compared to what's the other topography around it? A lot of this is just spending more time on glass. And sometimes, like, part of the way I learned, and I had, when it comes to really kick-ass spotting, I had a great teacher with Josh. You know, our guy Josh, one of our instructors, who's a phenomenal shooter and a long-range competitor, he taught me a lot about spotting by making mistakes and then making me call those mistakes. So he'd be like, all right, man, what's your call? And I'd say, all right, dude, give me 2 mils up and 1 mil left for win. And he'd be like, all right, 2 mils up, 1 mil left, ready, send it, boom. And he'd be like, I'd be like, all right, what'd you think about your shot? Felt pretty clean. right? I'd be like, right on, dude. Yeah, dude, you're fucking 3 mils high. And he'd be like, good. Yeah, that's right. Because I cranked that fucker too high to see if you could see that impact going high. You know? So he'd make mistakes and force me to see them. Or sometimes he'd even communicate. Like, he'd be like, all right, man, I'm going to dial 2 minutes off the target. Wham. You see that? That's what a 2 minute off the target hit looks like at 800 meters or whatever. You know what I mean? And that's going to look different versus a lot of different conditions. But, like, that's what that looks like. So now you can kind of start to, like, get that right in your mind of, oh, that's what that looks like. Oh, that's what a miss looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd feel the wind change and stick one in the dirt on purpose. So I would have to call the wind. Oh, shit, man, the wind changed. He'd be like, that's right. Did change. Good job seeing that. Now let's move on to the next stuff. You know what I mean? Or, you know, Josh, he never actually said good job. I would say, hey, man, oh, yeah, it's off on the left. He'd be like, fucking A right it was. That's more like Josh's teaching method. But,
like, yeah, I know.
Yeah. I did that on purpose. Maybe he never did any of that on purpose, and he was just fucking up and making it look like it was a learning point. But you know, that's how I learned to do it, and that's now subsequently how I teach people a better way of doing it. Because how I originally learned how to call wind was not very effective. You know, and that's... Which we could get into fucking military training in a minute, but or later, I mean. But it's like, dude...
Let's not.
The way I was taught to call wind was fucking wildly inefficient and was based on foliage that does not exist in Arizona. And based on conditions that don't exist most of the places I go.
Yep.
You know? So it's like, look at the range flag. Look at this pine tree. I'm like, yeah, our pine trees are different here. The range flag doesn't fucking exist, you know? It's like when you're taught range estimation, everyone's like, yeah, you measure it in football fields. I'm like, I never played fucking football. I don't know what one end of the football field looks like. I don't even know is that I've ever stood on one end of a football field and looked to the other end of a football field. When have I ever been on a football field? I didn't play fucking football. You know what I mean?
I didn't fucking play football either, but I've been on a football field or two.
But I can't imagine.
Did you run around a track in high school?
Yeah, but I can't say I've ever stood on one end of the football field and looked toward the other end of the football field and been like, that is 100 yards. That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't. I don't have enough time.
That should be 120.
I don't have enough time looking at from one fucking spot. Well, that's my point. I don't fucking know. So when they bring up a fucking football field, I'm like, that's fucking irrelevant to me. You know what I mean? It's irrelevant. I don't even know how big a baseball field is. I spent all kinds of time on baseball fields. I don't know.
It depends on what size field it was.
Right? How poor your fucking school is. That had a lot to do with it, too. So it was like, there's a lot of shit that fucking has a fact. I don't fucking get that shit. I don't fucking know. So to me, and a football field is great until the shit ain't flat. You try some hard fucking dude who's like, I can estimate football fields. You're like, all right, call this canyon. And they're like, fuck. And they're always long. 500 yards. You're like, 280. Get out of here. Nope, it's fucking 280 yards. No, it's 500 yards. I'm like, now tell me that deer story again where you shot a deer at 500 fucking yards. You know? By the way, is always a question I ask whenever someone's like, yeah, man. Longest deer kill this year. Oh, yeah? 350 yards. Oh, it's a good shot, man. Yeah. Did you laze it? Nah, dude, I just estimated. But I know what 350 yards is. Like, oh, that's cool. Point at something that's 350 yards away. You know? And, yeah, they point at something. You're like, that's like 180 yards, dude. No, it was like 300. That's a couple hundred yards.
Yes.
That's it. Because most people, out of context of a flat football field, for those apparently John who knows how to fucking measure in flat football field.
No, I didn't say I know how to do it. I understand the concept of
that's what something a flat that doesn't apply in the field. Like. Never applies in the field. I'm like, oh, that's so many football fields away.
Unless you're in Kansas.
Yeah, I've never really been in a lot of operational environments or hunting environments where it was totally fucking flat and I could measure it in estimated football fields, is my point. So a lot of it is as a spotter. Designate things that you do know, things you can apply, and communicate very, very clearly with your shooter, right? So in addition to training with them and working with them and everything, establish basic communication. Like nowadays, if I'm shooting with guys, you know, guys that I shoot and compete with regularly, Jason is an example. We're great team shooters together. We've done a lot of team matches together. I just let him know when I'm on glass. Spotter. And he lets me know when he's ready on the trigger. Shooter. And I tell him, we're together, send it. Wham. And he does it. And I expect him to send it within the next 3 seconds or I'm going to give him another fucking wind call. Mm-hmm. And then every roughly 3 seconds, I give him another wind call. 1 mil left. 1, 2, 3. 1 mil left. 1, 2, 3. Change. 1.5 left. 2 mils left. 4 mils left. Whatever, right? Give him your change. Hey,
shoot
change.
Better.
change. One mil right, you know, because fucking wind swirling down there, change directions, yeah. Does that kind of shit all the time. So it's like, have simple communication so you're not like, whoa, 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 hold on, buddy. The wind just changed. And now, dude, by the time you get done saying what you're about to say, the wind's going to change again.
Yeah, yeah.
So make it simple, but don't be giving your guy corrections if he's not even on the fucking gun. So let him know, like, hey, man, spotter, I'm on the glass. Shooter. All right, shooter. One mil left, Raj. Send it. Boom. Right? Whatever you fucking want your communication to be, keep it simple, keep it easy, make it work. You know, the longer and more drawn out it is, the more people are going to get confused about it.
Ugh.
So I would say that. Watching for trace, again, if it makes sense, I'm looking a third of the way down. So I'm bringing my focus closer to me than the target. Target's going to be a little blurry. I'm literally looking in the space between me and the target. Put the target in the lower third, you're more likely to catch the trace. Under certain atmospheric conditions or environmental conditions, you're going to catch the trace better anyway.
Yeah.
Some conditions are almost impossible. See if we can catch the trace.
Sometimes you'll catch it. Like my limited experiences, as I've caught it real close out of the gun, nothing in the middle, and then you may pick it up real close to the target.
Yeah, you might.
You know, it's like the majority of what I've seen is like real close to the target, and then I lose it again, and I'm like, I don't know where the fuck that went.
The other factor to this, too, is just reading through some other questions we had here, was watching for conditions. Like I said before, your shooter success is based on you. So if you're a spotter, this is not the time to be fucking around on your phone.
No.
Or taking a photo, or answering a question from girlfriend or whatever. Time to be fucking spotting. Because as conditions change, wind swirls, wind dies, whatever it is on you to make that call and let your shooter know that they change. Because if they don't notice it, they're pretty target focused potentially. If they don't notice that the conditions have changed, you're about to hose them.
Yep.
And trust your spotter. As long as your spotter hasn't really steered you wrong too much, trust your spotter. If your spotter makes a couple mistakes on calling some shots, I mean, the shit happens, right? It's gonna happen. Your spotter's way off all the time. Be like, dude, we got to fucking practice because every time I'm just freaking shooting the hillside at this point. Like, there's a problem here. Mm-hmm. And I can't trust you if you can give me calls that aren't going to work. So let's work on, you know, how to get you to that point. So, James, what's another question you have about spotting? Or John?
A lot of info that just got thrown out there.
Yeah, I know there's quite an abundance of... That was a very good... rebuttal to my question. John?
Dude, anything? Not really. Like, I understand the concepts. I think the biggest thing that you kind of hit on was going out and working together. And you don't always have to be shooting. It's just going out and sitting together. Hey.
This is how we're going to do this.
This is how we're going to do this. Let's do this dry a little bit. Okay, now we'll shoot a little bit. But it's just going out there. And if you know, like, if you're going to be in just one area all the time, that's great. Learn that area, hands down. If not, you know, go to as many different areas as you can. Like, you look at the desert, right? There's, like, four different microclimates in the desert around my house, right? Like, I've got flats, I've got hillsides, I've got canyons. Like, you got to go and observe all of these things. So take your spotting scope. Go find a canyon somewhere. Put up some streamers out at distance, right? So go find some Palo Verde trees. And find Palo Verde trees that are almost dead. Find some that are in full bloom. Right? Because you're going to find that, especially up and down these fucking canyons.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the bottom of the canyon, look at the top of the canyon, look at the middle of the canyon. You've got an endless array of microclimates that you're going to encounter. So go out, find you a nice spot that's relatively close and easy for you to get to. Set you up some range flags out there. Get your wind meter. Get your spotting scope. Right? Watch those. You know what those streamers are going to do under certain wind conditions, or most people do. Then figure it out. Right, start at 100 and get really good at calling these things at 100 yards. Right, like, okay, that's a 7 mile an hour wind from the right at 100 yards. You make that call, you walk down there that 100 yards. Okay, boom. Yes, that was a 7 mile an hour wind because thankfully it's still that 7 mile an hour wind. Right, it's just practicing and finding a way to hone that craft without necessarily having to go out and have someone burn through a ton of ammo. And it's a pain in the ass, man. And I've got a really crappy spotting scope. Like, it's really crappy. It's like $40. It's like a 10 to 300.
That is really crappy.
It's not quite like that, but it's a pretty crappy scope, but it works, and I can see through it. But it's not something I spend a lot of time doing because I'm not big into the precision thing. I understand the basic concepts, but
so better spotters will make better shooters. And you have to be a good spotter if you're going to compete at all or hunt by yourself, compete by yourself, because you're not going to have a spotter.
Right.
So better spotters make better shooters. That's an important thing to understand. The more you practice, better you're going to get. So find opportunities to go practice spotting. And as an example, like we'll have students will hit us up and say, hey, man, I see you got a rifle class coming up. Can I come spot for you? Can I come spot for a student? It's like, hell yeah, man. That's good practice for them. It doesn't cost them anything. They come to the range. They set up their spotting scope. They just hang out with us all day. They got little friggin' sunshade. And they just sit there and spot for students. You know what I mean? And they'll call corrections and start working on communication. If they're totally off base, we'll help them. And we tell the other students, hey, this is another student that's coming. If you guys want to come back and do it. We have one almost every rifle class. We have at least one student who's in there with their freaking spotting scope set up going, hey, man, I want to come call for a couple hours. We've had people stay all day. I'm fine with it. I don't care. Field carbine, precision rifle, intro precision rifle, all perfect opportunities to come learn how to spot. Hey, man, I just want to freaking watch some trace. I want to practice spotting. Competitions, local competitions, they're probably not going to let you spot as an RO if you're not very good. But if you're decent enough, go start spotting as an RO. You know, and just learning how to spot hits, learning how to look for things, learning how to move from target to target real quick, learning how to keep, you know, both eyes open. You're on the scope, so you can kind of superimpose what you see in the scope to what you see in the real life, so you can find the freaking object you're looking at, and you're not out looking all over the hillside trying to find the damn target. You know, how to identify landmarks to the scope, and even if they may not let you be like a volunteer RO or range officer or something at a match, then that's fine, dude. Just go there and be like, hey, man, I literally just want to set my spotting scope up. I want to spot for people. I won't say anything. I want to watch the better spotters and see how they do it. Yeah. Right? I'm just going to show up my spotting scope and just watch. There's no competition to be like, that's not allowed. There's no competition that's not going to freaking allow that. You know, they're always looking for more help anyway. So it's like, get out there and start spotting, because to really get better at spotting, you have to spot. You got to do it right, but you have to spend time spotting. Another thing I like a quick little piece of tool that I use is I always carry my Shema with me. A t-shirt. Nowadays, we got those little performance hoodies that we're wearing for the company shirts. But I will throw that hood up. I'll throw that Shema over. I'll drape it over my head and the scope if I don't need to see the outside environment to spot. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy. I can just pull up the end and peek and get back on target or whatever. Because all that reduction in glare from the sun, et cetera, makes it so much easier to see, reduces eye fatigue. That kind of darker environment helps my eye to pick up the light coming through the scope better.
I can't look through magnified optics without a cover like that and keep both eyes open.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to have something like that, or my eye just wears out super quick trying to keep one closed the whole time.
Yeah.
Drives me crazy. But I throw a Shema or a shirt or something over it. Well, now my left eye can focus through the glass while my right eye is focused on this blurry crap that's happening over here, but I'm not exhausting my eyes.
And in that, also with that is like, it helps me with all those. Also helps me stay comfortable.
Yeah.
In hot ass freaking Arizona.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that, I don't want to deal with that.
I ain't got time for that.
You know, I don't want to be sweating and freaking pouring a sweat strip in my eyes. I typically don't wear eye pro when I'm spotting, you know. Why look through glass kind of thing. Like, I don't have a choice. I need one less lens. Yeah, if you got eyeglasses, that's one thing. But, like, I don't have eyeglasses. I don't have corrective lenses, so I don't have to worry about it. If you got corrective lenses, that's something you got to worry about. But, I mean, those are some kind of tips I would say for spotting. To kind of wrap up this topic.
Well, one thing real
oh,
quick.
Go ahead, go
one
ahead.
Thing, about the, like, if you have prescription eyewear, make sure that if you're going to be spotting or shooting, make sure your glasses are ridiculously clean and do your very, very best to always look through the same spot in your lenses, especially if you're spotting or you're precision shooting. Because changing your head position and having to adjust your eye to a different part of your lens can make a difference depending on your prescription and how your brain processes that information. Because yes, we are in modern times and we are really good at doing things, but there are still minor imperfections in prescription glasses, and it can totally screw you up.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that to me, I'm like, I don't know anything about that shit because I don't wear corrective lenses, so thanks for chiming in there.
Yep.
Being a good shooting partner in general, I would say, sums up to this. It's about, to me, whether it's any kind of shooting, spotting specifically, but any kind of shooting, is about being as more interested in the success of the people you're with than your own success.
Yeah.
Now, don't sacrifice a good time so someone else has a good time, because if you do that too much, if you're always the one who's working, if you're always the one who's like, oh God, I'm always the one working, I'm always the one helping, I'm always the one, like, then you're not going to want to go out with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's why, like, outside of our shooting instructor friends and stuff, I don't really go shooting with people, because everyone wants to shoot my targets with my guns and my ammo. I'm always the one. And then when we're out there, they want fucking free tips and tricks. And, well, how do you do this? Well, how do you hold this? Well, how do you do this? I'm like, dude, this is my fucking job, man. Like, I love helping people, so I don't mind doing it. But, like, I don't want to have to do it all the time. Every time I have a gun in my hand, I don't want to be fucking helping people. So, and from our staff, I don't mind at all, because it's a betterment for proficiency. But,
yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, you find yourself in certain social groups who are.
High tides make all boats float.
Exactly. Something like that. So the idea is, like, if you go out, then you give your, you know, kind of make it more about your shooting partner or partners having a good time and getting success than it is about you being right about spotting hits. You know, I'm a lot more concerned about my hitters or my shooters hitting than giving me any credit for spotting hits. Now, here's the thing about spotters. Remember all those badass fucking sniper shots you always hear about? Everyone talks about the shooters. Ain't no one ever remember the fucking spotter's
name.
Nobody
mentions the spotters.
Right? But let me tell you what. That dude, he was the one putting in the fucking work.
Mm-hmm.
Other dude might have pulled the trigger. He might have had some skill there for sure. But that spotter, that dude was putting in some work. He's calculating winds, calculating distance, calculating trajectory. That dude's putting in some freaking work. You know what I mean? That's a big freaking deal. So, but generally, yeah, just go out with the idea of, man, I want my, you know, I want my crew, I want my friends, I want my partner, whatever it is, to you know, to enjoy this and get good results and have a good time, so they'll want to continue to come out with me. I'll want to continue to go out with them. If I'm just out there fucking beating them up and I'm not helping them really, and they're working hard but I'm not really putting in the effort, they're not gonna want to go out with me, and I'm probably not gonna want to go out with them anymore either. So that's kind of what I'd say about that. Anything to add to that, guys?
No, I think that pretty much sums that up.
All right, remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information via email, info@trainingaz.com. And if you have show ideas that you want us to talk about, including the extra $10 patron show, email it to us or text it to us via Instagram or what's the other one? Facebook, the one we hardly ever fucking use anymore. That thing. All right, hit us up. Remember to follow us on that Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to check out the other shows on the network. A lot of good stuff out there. Next week, we're back live, and we're going to have an exciting show.
Oh.
We're going to take James hunting.
Ooh.
And then we're going to talk about it on our show. We're going to talk about getting started in hunting, what we had to do to get James there, what we had to do to get him ready, and then how we went out and did, and what we went out and did, and what his experiences are. So next week, we'll be talking about getting started in hunting and James's first hunting trip. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.